It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Oh, my goodness.
Touchdown.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to a Monday edition of Overtime. It is not a beautiful day, but it's fun and beautiful to be on the air once again this Monday, May 18th edition of Overtime. Around the corner, we read into and react the big headline in the National Football League. A 42, soon to be 43-year-old future Hall of Fame quarterback is back in the National Football League. Aaron Rodgers, at long last, gets out of the darkness cave, wherever the heck he was. He was in Pittsburgh at the facility, signed a contract, and is back for more to lead the Pittsburgh Steelers here in 2026. I'll tell you why I'm relatively bullish on Pittsburgh, but I'm not going to tell you they're going to go win a playoff game. I think this is a really solid team that got better this offseason in numerous ways, but how much better? Not too much. Not better enough to be a team that's going to contend in the AFC. We'll dive right in to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Aaron Rodgers led Pittsburgh Steelers coming up around the corner. After we hit you with your sports history lesson on a Monday, on this day in sports history, reset the field and the Final Fours taking shape in the NBA and NHL. NBA-NHL reset. The Timberwolves bow out. A 30-point loss on Friday night. Timberwolves are out. The Spurs looking good. Cleveland finding a way to win in seven against Detroit. A lot in the middle of hour number one. We conclude hour one talking USF baseball. Cougar baseball head coach Grant Heeb will reset and rewind the season with us. Talk about what is ahead for his program, honoring seniors, who is coming back, and the future prospects of USF Cougar baseball come into focus at the end of hour number one. Hour two, headlines and highlights, latest from the NFL. Rodgers is back, and what notable free agents are still out there? And how about an update on a former best running back, most dynamic playmaker candidate in the NFL? Remember the name Alvin Kamara? Where the heck is he? He's still in New Orleans, still under contract, but nobody seems to have any idea if he's going to play this year, what capacity he'll have to play, what kind of role he'll have in New Orleans or somewhere else. Last year at the deadline, he spoke out and said, if you trade me, I'm not going to play. I would rather just retire than play anywhere else. We'll see if that is still in the stages of that in regards to Alvin Kamara. Would he play somewhere else? Will they trade him? Will they cut him? How does he fit in with a backfield that they have Devin Neal, a highly regarded young running back? They also spent a bunch of money on Travis Etienne coming over from the Jacksonville Jaguars as they have reshaped the backfield. But does Alvin Kamara have a role? We'll update you on that and more NFL talk, whip around coverage, and the good, the bad, the ugly before we are done on this Monday, May 18th edition of Overtime. Let's dive right into your scorecard. We start in the NBA, where rewind all the way to Friday night. The T-Wolves, no contest. The Spurs, dominant in victory, 139-109. They win the series 4-2. Stephon Castle, 32 points, 11 rebounds. Anthony Edwards at 24 points, but the T-Wolves, no contest, particularly on the glass. A 60-29 rebounding disadvantage. The T-Wolves only turned the basketball over 5 times as a team on Friday night, but the glass was dominated by the Spurs. And all the talk the following day, Saturday morning sports talk, was, the heck was that from Anthony Edwards? 8 minutes to go, checks out of the game, and goes over and starts dapping up the Spurs, saying, great job, y'all go win the whole darn thing, great to compete against you. That is received in many different ways. Everybody's saying they weren't going to come back. The game was over. Series was over. Let him be. Other people are taking pot shots at maturity, composure, the right time to do things like that. And here is Jay Williams getting to the why behind it all from Friday night.
You know why he did it? Because they played together. Because he was livid. He was disgusted with the way his team played in a closeout scenario. So you know what he wanted to do? He wanted to get his ass off that court. So a lot of the old school fellas will say to you, well, hey, that's not the way you should do it, young fella. You competed to the end. But when you're competing by yourself, and when you hear players like Naz Reid or Dante DiVincenzo talk about our team is moodiness, they're moody, they're talking about Julius Randle. Mm. It was unacceptable behavior by the Minnesota Timberwolves. I feel horrible for the way they played. Anthony Edwards is one of the most competitive dudes on this planet. The fact that he checked out early lets you know that their team is not like a fierce unit the way the Spurs were.
There you go. That's the recap from Jay Williams of ESPN. Spurs win 139-109. That series ends in six. And here we are once again, T-Wolves fans. Every year over the last two, 3 years saying, gosh, we're so darn close. Can't wait till next year. Are you saying that now? What kind of confidence do you have when the Spurs appear to be just that much better? The Spurs, of course, are there. Thunder waiting in the wings in the West. You feel like those two teams are ahead of Minnesota. We can debate all day long about how far ahead they are and if Minnesota could regain some momentum in the offseason with the right maneuvering. Maybe they move off of Julius Randle. We'll wait and see, but there are a lot of questions, limited answers right now for Minnesota as they enter the long offseason ahead. Yesterday, Detroit entered the offseason as Cleveland picked up a road win in Game 7, 125-94. Gary Washburn saying it best, the Pistons plain and simply just ran out of gas in the series.
I think when you look at a seven-game series, and sometimes even though it goes seven and you just one win from that next round, you just don't have enough and you run out of gas. And I think the Pistons, for all they've went through this year, the injuries, coming back from 3-1 down against Orlando, you know, winning in Cleveland, down 3-2, it just seemed like they ran out of gas. Their spirit was done. They had nothing left, and Cleveland had a lot left.
Cleveland has plenty left. Evan Mobley, not a triple-double, but a nice performance, 21-12-6. Donovan Mitchell, 26 points, 8 assists. Cleveland moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals. They'll meet up with the New York Knicks, winning that series in 7. Stephen A. Smith on Detroit, was the season a disappointment as the number one seed in the East?
Yes, because they didn't make the conference finals. They were the number one seed. They won 60 games, major props to them or whatever. But I'm just talking about their expectations. Once we saw what we saw, particularly from Cade Cunningham emerging as a league MVP candidate, it's not that the result, meaning losing the series, was a disappointment. It's how they went out on your home court in a game 7, down by damn near 40. That's the disappointment. That's where that comes in, because it reminded us of what their deficiencies are. We got to give credit where credit is due to J.B. Bickerstaff, who was my coach of the year. You don't have Malik Beasley because of personal reasons he got himself into. You lose Dennis Schroeder, of course, and Tim Hardaway Jr., and you're looking at Cade Cunningham, and you really, really didn't have a bona fide secondary scorer.
There you go, Stephen A. Smith, an emphatic yes, it was a disappointment. Number one seed not reaching the conference finals. The team that will reach the conference finals, going to be Cleveland. That series begins on Tuesday night. More on that in a moment. But tonight, we'll see the beginning of the Western Conference Finals. Game 1 from OKC, Spurs, and the Thunder, 7:30 on NBC. This is a big one for future pecking order, according to Brian Windhorst.
I think they might be ready, because I thought the same thing. And throughout the postseason, I have watched them face a little bit of adversity and always show poise and always answer. They had Wembanyama get the concussion in the first series, got ejected in the second series. They've had tough road games that they've risen up from behind and won. This really, to me, is a referendum on whether or not it's Victor Wembanyama's league. I believe it will be a league that he owns at some point. Maybe that some point is now. This is a great opportunity. This series, your fate. By the way, the injury report is clean. We're going to have everybody in this series, including Jalen Williams, coming back from the hamstring injury. This is exactly what you want. They're both reasonably rested. There is no reason that this shouldn't be as high level basketball as we've seen.
That's going to be tonight, 7:30 on NBC. Game 1, the Thunder are a 6.5-point home favorite. Tomorrow, Eastern Conference Finals, Game 1. Cavaliers at MSG to battle the Knicks, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Knicks are favored by 7.5 points. Antonio Daniels talking about the two-headed monster in New York, Jalen Brunson, Carl Anthony Towns, and what needs to happen in the series for the Knicks to find their way to the NBA Finals.
In the Eastern Conference, there's a difference between best and most impact, because I think Jalen Brunson is the best player in that series. But I think for the New York Knicks to advance to the NBA Finals, Karl-Anthony Towns needs to be the most impactful.
There you go, Antonio Daniels of ESPN. Monica McNutt weighing in on the defense being key in the series.
In this new offense, yes, it's about Karl-Anthony Towns as a centerpiece, but there's also so much off-ball movement, right? And so last night as we're preparing for this one, I'm like, okay, who's going to struggle with that? I think Merrill, Wade, Strus, they're guarding their butts off. They're doing what they're supposed to do as role players. But to go after and target where you're going to have some soft spots, Donovan Mitchell, while he competes, is not the biggest defender there, right? And then James Harden tends to be a little bit slow-footed. But this is where, to me, the way that the Knicks are playing on both sides of the basketball is important to call out. Mm-hmm. They've been defending mm-hmm. at such a high level. And if OG Anunoby is healthy, which all signs indicate he'll be ready for game one, they really, I think, to me, could put more pressure on Cleveland defensively than Cleveland can do the other way.
And that's Monica McNutt, excuse me, tonight in the NBA, Spurs and Thunder, 7:30 on NBC, Cavs and the Knicks, 7 o'clock on ESPN tomorrow night. For game one, where New York favored by 7.5. Stanley Cup playoffs over the weekend. Saturday, another unpredictable result between Buffalo and Montreal. Sabres win on the road. Facing elimination, they stave it off with an 8-3 victory. Jack Quinn, one of many goal scorers, had 2 goals and a helper in the win. 8-3, series tied 3 games apiece. Tonight, they'll settle it all. Game 7, 6:30 on ESPN. Tied 3 apiece. Buffalo, a marginal favorite. PK Subban, keys for tonight's game 7.
For Buffalo, you got to manage the energy in that building. It's going to be a ton of energy. The fans have been waiting for this moment for a long time, and they can't afford to sit back. Their defense got active in game 6. When their defense are active, they're a different team. So for them, they got to skate. They got to be the faster team tonight.
Got to be the faster team. Canadians and Sabres, 6:30 on ESPN. Western Conference Finals begin on Wednesday. Vegas in Denver to battle the Avalanche. Game 1, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Colorado a -190 puck line favorite this morning on DraftKings Sportsbook. A reminder, a absurdly successful weekend for the Sioux Falls Stampede in the Clark Cup Finals. On Friday, they took down Muskegon 3-1. Proved it again on Saturday with a 3-0 shutout win in Game 2. So they're up 2-0 in the best-of-five series. Series will shift Friday, Saturday, if necessary, to Muskegon. Friday's game, 6:10, a central start time. Major League Baseball. Minnesota Twins got a win yesterday, moved their record to 21-26. And Ryan Jeffers digging the long ball once again.
Jeffers crushes into left field. Back to the track, to the wall. Out of here! Jeffers gives the Twins a 4-3 lead. His 7th homer of the year.
That came in the bottom of the 5th. Here's how the final call. Final out sounded yesterday in a victory for Minnesota.
No balls, 2 strikes, 1-run lead, runners on the corners. There goes the runner, and the pitch is popped up. Straight up the stovepipe for Caratini into the shadows in front of the net. He's got it! And the Minnesota Twins defeat the Milwaukee Brewers by the final score of 5-4. Another thrilling one-run game, and this one tips to the Twins' side of the ledger as the Twins defeat the Brewers.
Twins win at 5-4, new record 21-26. Manager Derek Shelton on the game and the series that's now behind them.
I think they did. I mean, we're talking about one of the elite teams in the National League, and they put a ton of pressure on you. They do a lot of things right, and fortunately, you know, the last couple of days, one-run games, it didn't go our way, and today we were able to capitalize, you know, on a mistake they made, ball going into our dugout, Cody being able to score, and then held on at the end with our pitching, which was, it was a good victory for us.
Twins manager Derek Shelton. Bailey Ober, the ace yesterday, 5-2, the new record following his latest win on the season. Other finals, Cleveland over Cincinnati 10-3, Toronto over Detroit 4-1. Tigers are in trouble. They're 20-27. Elsewhere, White Sox get the better of the Cubs in the South Side. Extra innings, a 9-8 victory for Chicago, boosting their record to 24-22. Other finals in the AL Central, Kansas City beat St. Louis on the road 2-0 as the Royals identical record to Detroit at 20-27. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, we'll see 6 total games featuring area teams. Guardians and Tigers, 5:40 on Fox Sports 1. Red Sox and Royals get going at 6:40. Astros and Twins, same time at 6:40. 6 o'clock, the pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Other matchups on the way, Brewers at Cubs, Rangers at Rockies, White Sox visiting the Mariners tonight, the nightcap at 8:40. NFL football, all the big story over the weekend is that a 42-year-old quarterback that the Steelers were banking on and seemingly pleading, sitting, waiting, and wishing for him to say, Yes, did so. Over the weekend, Aaron Rodgers is back. Here's Chris Canty on the pairing with Mike McCarthy.
I'm two minds about this move because on the one hand, I love the fact that Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy get to come back together and try to make it right.
Very cool.
On how things ended in Green Bay with Rodgers seemingly ousted Mike McCarthy and then showing appreciation for him in the aftermath of said decision and realizing how the other half lives when you don't have a seasoned coach like Mike McCarthy on the sidelines, I think the absence has made the heart grow fonder for Aaron Rodgers toward Mike McCarthy. So I want to see the humanistic element of that storyline play itself out on the field. On the other side of the coin, though, is the Pittsburgh Steelers franchise and them being able to spin it forward and stabilize the most important position in all the team sports. And I don't think this signing helps them do that in any way, shape, or form. It just continues to put a Band-Aid on a situation that's been bad post-Ben Roethlisberger. And until they find a viable long-term solution at that position, they're going to continue to stay on the treadmill of mediocrity.
And it certainly feels that way. This is a nice signing. It's good to see Rodgers back as a longtime Packer fan. I want to see him keep playing. And certainly he's not awful. He's an average quarterback at this stage. You could argue above average quarterback as well. Not elite any longer. But I'm excited about what he can put out there. Is it going to be good enough to get the Steelers a playoff win or two or three? Probably not. Coming up this year, we will wait and see. One thing that the Steelers are going to be monitoring is their division. How winnable is it? And the Baltimore Ravens have a new head coach in Lamar Jackson. That situation feels a little tenuous right now. Here's Dan Graziano on the quarterback in Baltimore and if the team should be worried about the dynamics between the quarterback and Coach Minter, who's just starting the job.
I think he's got 2 years left on his contract, so there may ultimately be no problem. But the fact is, the Ravens had a stated goal going into this offseason of getting a contract extension done with Lamar Jackson because they needed to for salary cap purposes. Now, they're ultimately able to restructure his contract, but that was their plan B. They didn't want to do it. The fact that they couldn't, you know, kind of get him to successfully engage on a new deal is an indicator that, you know, there's some reason he doesn't want to. So with Lamar, we don't know what that is, what it could be, what it means.
That is all from the NFL for now. A reminder, NFL schedules are all out, so check them out. We'll have a full Vikings schedule breakdown coming up on the Thursday edition of the show with Dustin Baker. In the golf world, PGA Championship won yesterday by Aaron Rye at 9 under par. Two-way tie for second between John Rahm and Alex Smalley at 6 under. And then softball baseball over the weekend. Nice effort from Augustana. They beat St. Cloud State in game 2 on Friday and fell for their second loss of the regional round, being eliminated by Southern Arkansas on Saturday, 11-6. Auggie softball concluding another nice season with a final mark of 31-28. D1 softball, USD, fell to Nebraska Friday 4-1, got back on the horse and beat Louisville Saturday 4-2, and then fell in extras against Grand Canyon 5-4. But I got to tell you, based on overall sentiment, I think the Yotes did their job and then some this year. Man, what a story. All sorts of big moments. Coach Piv, the clip there in the big spot of that game. Living across the softball world, USD concludes the season 21-36-1. First ever Summit League title. First ever postseason appearance in the tournament. First ever postseason victory. Lot to be excited about moving forward for Coach Wagner and USD softball. Now, Augustana Viking baseball. My goodness. On Friday, they picked up a loss to Pittsburgh State. The Gorillas beat them 7-1. They get back on Saturday, take care of Arkansas Tech with a 5-2 win, and then hammer the Gorillas to the tune of a 10-8 victory Saturday afternoon. So Sunday set up a winner-take-all final game of the regional, and Augustana beat the Gorillas again, 13-7. Augie moves on to the Super Regionals that begin on Thursday. They'll face off in a best-of-three series Thursday, Friday, Saturday, if necessary, against Central Missouri. Start times to be determined. We'll be talking with head coach Tim Huber in the middle of the week here on the show. Let's dive right into your ReliaBank headlines of the day. It's hour number one. As always, for a better local banking option, check them out at ReliaBank.com or in person in the 605. History continued to be rewritten for USD softball on day 2 of the Lincoln Regional at the NCAA tournament on Saturday. Yotes earned a comeback victory over number 25th ranked Louisville for the program's first ever tournament win and victory over an ACC opponent. The Nightcap saw USD fall to a quality Grand Canyon team in extras ending the historic run and historic season for USD softball. You can view all of the nuts and bolts and recap, goyotes.com. The season came to a close with a loss in Game 2 to Grand Canyon, ending with a record of 21-36-1. Yotes won 11 of their last 19 games of the year, dating back to April 18th, to earn a berth into the Summit League Tournament, winning four games at the Summit League Tournament and earn the program's first ever berth to the NCAAs, and won their first ever tournament game. Quite the season for Coach Wagner and the Yotes, and certainly a lot to celebrate despite getting ousted in the regional round. A wonderful season for USD Coyote softball. The Augustana Viking softball season also saw their season come to a close over the weekend on the campus of Missouri Southern on Friday night after knocking off number 20 St. Cloud State 4-0. Vikings fell to number 9 Southern Arkansas at the Pat Lapira softball complex. Full recap available at GoAuggie.com. The Augustana baseball team has kept on running. They'll make their way to the Super Regional round. Augie wasn't ready for the baseball season to be quite over just yet. The 17th-rated Vikings finished an incredible run through Central Region 1, knocking off the host and third-ranked Pittsburgh State for the second consecutive day. This time, on Sunday afternoon, a 13-7 win at Al Ortolani Field. They advance to the Super Regional. They'll face Central Missouri in a best of three. If they get out of that round, they're on to the D2 College World Series. Full recap at GoAuggie.com. And let's talk a little Jackrabbit baseball. Omaha gained the lead with a 6-run sixth inning, closed out the regular season with a 13-8 win over SDSU in Summit League baseball action. SDSU's new record, 12-15 in conference, 21-30 overall. They will be the 4 seed for the Summit League baseball tournament and will face top-seeded Oral Roberts at noon on Wednesday when action gets underway. Omaha seeded second and will meet up with Northern Colorado at 6 p.m. that night. It's a double elimination tournament. Will be played at Siebert Field at the University of Minnesota campus in Minneapolis. GoJacks.com, the latest there. And lastly, until Sunday, Aaron Rye was best known for being the PGA Tour golfer who played with two gloves. Now, he'll be remembered as the first English-born golfer to win the PGA Championship in more than a century after his stunning victory at Aronimink Golf Club. In the final round, in which none of the game's biggest stars seemed capable of taking control, Rye finally did. Won the Wanamaker Trophy with a 5-under 65. His 72-hole 9-under performance of 271 was 3 strokes better than John Rahm and Alex Smalley. Rye said he wasn't aware of England's 107-year drought without a PGA championship until Saturday. Extremely proud, he said post-match. There's a lot of incredible and historic English players over those 100 years who have gone on to achieve incredible things, phenomenal careers. But to win this event and then be the person that's the first one to have won it in a long time from my country is an amazing thing and something to be extremely proud of. He became the first English-born golfer to win the PGA Championship since Jim Barnes won in 1919. In 1916, Rye's victory also ended a 10-year streak of American golfers winning the trophy. Australia's Jason Day, the last non-American to win the PGA when he triumphed at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin back in 2015. And lastly here, other broad strokes updates. How about the Philadelphia Phillies? They have risen from the ashes of a very tough start. Zach Wheeler pitched 7 sparkling innings, according to ESPN.com. Bryce Harper hit a homer off ace Paul Skenes, and the Phillies beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 6-0 and swept the 3-game series. And now the resurgent Phillies improved to 15-4 since interim manager Don Mattingly took over. They snuck over the 500 mark for the first time since April 7th. Overall record is 24-23. Still not great, but to be honest with you, it's been quite the resurgence for Philadelphia, and it continued yesterday with a sweep and a shutout victory over the Pirates. Those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number one. When we come back, it's time to look back on the weekend and specifically look back on the days that occurred in sports history on this day. We'll do that coming up next. Also, reset things in the NBA, the NHL, the Timberwolves bow out. And we'll talk about the Eastern Conference and Western Conference finals as we have our Final Four in the NBA. We will know our Final Four in the NHL by the end of the night. We'll do all of that coming up next on a Monday, May 18th edition of Overtime.
fun.
College hoops and NBA basketball, the NFL and Major League Baseball. It's all here on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Along on this Monday, May 18th edition of Overtime. Before we dive in to the latest NHL NBA news, set the stage for the Final Four in the NBA, soon to be Final Four in the NHL. Let's look back on this day in sports history on a Monday.
History repeats itself.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Well, sometimes.
What are they going to roll it? He caught it? Touchdown!
In the world of sports, there are moments that are fleeting.
My, oh my!
And some that live forever.
Russell looks, throws inside. Oh my God, it's picked off!
Oh, he broke his ankles!
Snap good, spot down. Walsh's kick is up, and it is no good! He missed it! Are you kidding me?
It's time for Bert to deliver those moments that happened on this day in sports history.
All right, on this day in sports history, we'll start all the way back in 1880. It was the sixth running of the Kentucky Derby. On this day in sports history, and George Garrett Lewis aboard Fonso won the race in 2 minutes and 37 and a half seconds. That is pretty darn slow by historic standards for the Kentucky Derby, but the excuse that day, which is absurd to think about because every time we watch the Derby, the conditions are either excellent or rainy, nasty, yucky, sloppy. But in 1880, it was dusty, an estimated 5-inch deep dust on the track that day in 1880. George Garrett Lewis aboard Fonso, the winner in 1880. In 1897, the New York Giants baseball team, third baseman Bill Joyce, became the last player in baseball history to hit 4 triples in a game as the Giants beat Pittsburgh that day 11-5, 1920, the 45th running of the Preakness. Clarence Cummer aboard Man O' War, which is regarded as the greatest racehorse of all time, defeat upset by 1.5 lengths in a time of 151.6 seconds. Man O' War, the career dominance, 21 starts, 20 wins, 1 second place finish, 7 world speed records, and a 28-foot stride, the longest ever measured and a thoroughbred horse. There is a little bit to the resume for Man O' War on this day in 1920, the 45th Preakness, and Man O' War a winner there. 1933, first Major League Baseball All-Star Game announced for July 6th at Comiskey Park in Chicago to be played as part of the Chicago World's Fair. The fans picked the players 1933 on this day. Fast forward quite a bit to 1990, staying in the Windy City, Chicago Cubs Ryne Sandberg ends the second baseman record 123 errorless game streak on this day in 1990. 2001, on this day, 101-year-old Harold Stilson became the oldest golfer ever to record a hole-in-one when he aced the 108-yard par 3 16th hole at Deerfield Country Club in Florida, an ace for an 101-year-old on this day in 2001. And lastly, just last year at Quail Hollow Golf Club in Charlotte, PGA Championship men's golf, Scottie Scheffler claimed his third major title by 5 strokes ahead of Bryson DeChambeau, Harris English, and Davis Riley. Birthdays to celebrate today, going back to 1909. Fred Perry, born then in Stockport, England, lived to the age, quick math on the spot, 86, lived to 1995. English tennis player, first to win a career Grand Slam, 8-time Grand Slam singles champion. Fred Perry, born on this day in 1909. Today is also a posthumous birthday for Brooks Robinson, born in 1937, passed away in 2023. The American Baseball Hall of Fame third baseman, 16 gold gloves, born on this day in Little Rock, Arkansas. Today is big number 80 for Reggie Jackson, born in 1946. Also, American Baseball Hall of Famer, right fielder, 14-time All-Star, World Series winner What is that? Five times over, 72, 73, 74, 77, and 1978. Reggie Jackson celebrating big number 80 today, born in Wincote, Pennsylvania, on this day in 1946. 1971, a punter birthday to celebrate today. The punter of the Green Bay Packers Super Bowl 31 winning team. First team All-Pro, Pro Bowler a couple times over, born in Alton, Illinois. Happy birthday. 1971 birthday for Craig Hendrick. And other notable football birthdays today. 1983 birthday for former Heisman Trophy winning quarterback Vince Young at the University of Texas. And Travis Hunter celebrating big number 23 today. Also, Heisman Trophy winner, University of Colorado, born in West Palm Beach, Florida on this day in 2003. Hockey talk now. Star defenseman Quinn Hughes was a revelation, it seemed, for Minnesota Wild hockey down the stretch of the year, and he is speaking out about his future with the club, saying he is, quote, definitely open to signing a contract extension with the Wild. General manager Bill Guerin swung the NHL's biggest trade of the season when he acquired the Norris Trophy winner from the Vancouver Canucks in December. The 26-year-old had 53 points in 48 games for Minnesota while leading the NHL in average ice time this year. Hughes saying everything you want to hear from a budding star player. I really like it here. I would definitely be open to re-signing. We'll see what Billy, as in Bill Guerin, wants to do. We're 36 hours removed from elimination, this story last week. I'm not sure I'm ready to go into details what they would look like. Wild upset the Stars in the first round, lost to the Avs in five games. And certainly, Quinn Hughes, along with Kirill Kaprizov and many others, Boldy and so many more, Brock Faber, are a big part of the future of the Minnesota Wild on the ice. There has been speculation around the NHL that Hughes could sign a three-year extension that would give the Wild a window to win a Stanley Cup with the defenseman while potentially allowing Hughes to get on the same timeline as his brother Jack Hughes, the star center for the Devils, whose eight-year contract ends in 2030. Reset here quickly in the NHL. Your latest odds here on a Monday, as we're trimming our way down to just five teams to go, four by tomorrow. Colorado, still your favorite, plus 130. Carolina, not far behind, plus 165. Vegas, plus 600. Buffalo and Montreal, again, one of these teams eliminated tomorrow, so this will get a little bit of a haircut on the odds. Buffalo, plus 1,400. Montreal, slightly behind them at plus 1,500. Right now, the San Antonio Spurs backcourt trio of Stephon Castle, De'Aaron Fox, and Dylan Harper proved every bit as lethal on Friday night as franchise superstar Victor Wembanyama in spearheading a series-clinching 30-point win over the Timberwolves in Game 6. Castle had a game-high 32, had 11 boards, 6 assists, and helped the trio account for nearly half of the scoring for the team, who finished with the third most points in a playoff game in franchise history, 139-109. Now, the other side of things, Minnesota notably frustrated in the game, frustrated post-game, and we'll see where they go from here. There's a lot of big decisions to make this offseason, but Anthony Edwards, a featured story at ESPN.com, penned over the weekend by Myron Metcalf. Edwards unsure how the Wolves can get over the hump after a loss against the San Antonio Spurs. Anthony Edwards saying post-game, I just tip my hat to them. They're the better team. I mean, at that point, you're not going back in. You're just going to try to give them their respect. He certainly got off the bench 8 minutes roughly to go and went over and shook some hands, had some handshakes, dap-ups, hugs, mid-game commemoration for the opposing team on his home floor. Not a great look. And I understand the series was over. The game was over, Bert. They're not going to come back and win. I understand that. But there's always time at the end of a game, time at the final timeout, final TV stoppage. Head on over. Go over then. 2 minutes to go, 90 seconds to go, end of the game, spend your time. Absolutely. But during the game, didn't sit right with me, didn't sit right with many about Anthony Edwards. But as we heard in hour number one, Jay Williams just saying probably pretty darn ticked off. And Edwards talking about if there's any common theme in the recent playoff exits. Good question, no comment. When asked what it'll take for the T-Wolves to get over the hump and topple the Spurs and Thunder moving forward, I don't know, man. I don't think that's a question for me. Chris Finch, though, said front offices will be perplexed as they attempt to solve the Western Conference's puzzle. You either got to be a problem or have a solution. Got to be either built in the way that troubles your opponent. That's something you don't have. Or you got to have a counter to what they do have. So I'm sure GMs across the league, these are all things that they wrestle with all the time. No doubt about it. as we do a post-mortem on the season for Minnesota. No doubt about it, they're a really darn good team. Really deep team with all sorts of young talent and a deep bench with Naz Reid and so many other guys lining up for an opportunity. They have an enviable situation. But if you look at it from pecking order in the West to pecking order in the East, they kind of fall in where Cleveland, Detroit, Philadelphia is relative to the Western Conference. I'm not saying they are those teams or are peers of those teams. They're not. I think Minnesota is better. They're just in a really tough conference right now where you have a Denver team, which Minnesota's matched up well against, that they might be passing or they may have already passed in that pecking order. But you're also staring up at two teams that could be above them for a very long time. So yes, this is a big offseason ahead for Minnesota and continued importance from the week to week moving forward. We'll take a break, come back, talk USF Cougar baseball, head coach Grant Heeb recapping the season and talking about what is ahead for his program centered up right here in the 605. Take a break, come back with more of the Monday edition of the show after this.
Fun. The best sporting matchups and coverage. We are ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Monday, May 18th edition of Overtime. We'll head over to the ESPN hotline right now for the first time today, first time this week, recapping another nice season for USF Cougar baseball. They concluded with a record of 26-26. Joining us now to recap things, talk about what is ahead in the offseason puzzle and beyond for his program, USF Cougar baseball head coach Grant Heeb, our guest here on a Monday. Coach, welcome back into the show. How you doing this week? Oh, I think I lost him. Let's go over to line one. I think this is Coach calling back in. Coach, I think I may have lost you for a moment. I hope this is you. How you doing this week?
Yep.
All right.
Good. How you doing,
Bert? I'm doing great. Coach, 26-26, the final record for the season. Take us back as you guys bow out in the NSIC tournament for the final moments of the season. Take us back in just kind of your emotions as the season came to a close just recently.
Well, I mean, yeah, we finished fourth in the league, and I mean, last game of the year was kind of a story of our year overall. We had a 6-0 lead in the sixth, good starting pitching, but our bullpen was kind of running on fumes towards the end of the year. We had some injuries to our starting pitchers, and it just thinned us out, and we blew that lead, lost by one, and hit a leadoff triple in the bottom of the ninth, and couldn't push him in to tie it up. And so just situational hitting, little things that we didn't capitalize on throughout the season, which I thought we could have won 30 games or more. But yeah, we just had too many instances where we didn't make some plays and just couldn't get it done and ended up being .500. But overall, it was a good step. I mean, to continue finishing towards the top part of the league and, you know, a good step. We had some good players that Mitch Iliff got all conference, you know, and Drew Miller, second team. So we had some good individual success, too. It was definitely a good step, but I just wish we could have got more, to be honest.
NSIC baseball tournament for the USF Cougars. Picked up a win over Wayne State 9-1 in the opener. Lost to Augie 9-4. And then again, the aforementioned season-ending defeat to UMary, a final of 7-6. And the season coming to a close in 2026 with a final mark of 26-26. Joined by head coach Grant Heeb here on a Monday. Coach, let's highlight these seniors and those to be departing from the program. The impact they leave behind, certainly you want more, like you mentioned, this particular season. But how did you personally view this senior class and those that are departing the program this offseason?
Oh, I mean, they helped help carry the torch from last year's run to maintain the success and kind of keep the level, the standard, I should say, at a higher level. And so I was happy with these guys. Some of them were transfers that only been here for a few years. Some were guys that were here for 4 years. So it was kind of a mixed group. And, you know, we do have some guys that, you know, are leaving early they're graduating, but they're going to go get their master's and try to play up at Division I. And so it's, you know, some guys that weren't sure, you know, there's always that chance, you know, that's just the way it is right now at Division II. If you have some studs, there's a chance they can try to go up. And so, you know, we're just kind of seeing how the dust settles right now. And then, you know, there's a lot of kids in the transfer portal already and kids from around our league. And with us gaining traction in our league, we've had a lot of guys reaching out to us and where I didn't have 5 years ago. So it's a good thing. I'm happy for this group, but I just, like I said, wish we could have went a little further.
Coach, talk to me about your transfer portal philosophy, because we spoke a little bit off air about, you know what, you want it to be a springboard. You want to have success in the program. If people are leaving and having opportunities, that probably means you're doing something right and helping grow these players. But at the same time, there's some immediacy. You want to win as well. How do you guys as a program approach the portal, and how aggressive do you think you might be in terms of bringing people in via the portal this offseason or moving forward?
I mean, if you want to win, we found out you gotta adjust to the times. And if there's kids in there that can help your program win and they're good students, you know, I like to do my research. And some are kids that we recruited out of high school, went somewhere, didn't work out, went to junior college, and then went to a four-year. I mean, it's all different situations. Mm-hmm. And so we try to just make sure they're not going to be a bad fit and not kind of take away from what we've been working on as a culture and things like that. So, yeah, we put in our research, but we're definitely looking at transfers and junior college transfers and just anybody that can help us get better, because, you know, the best teams in our league are doing the same thing. They're not slowing down. They're trying, and they're losing players as well. It's not just us. It's around the board. So it's just a matter of how quick can you regroup. And like I said, just us getting some traction and players going home and talking, and a lot of these guys play summer ball together, that all plays into these guys and has an effect on where they end up going to school.
Talking USF Cougar baseball in the offseason ahead with head coach Grant Heave here on a Monday, May 18th edition of Overtime. Coach, what can you tell us about marquee returners coming back as the roster currently sits right now? What are a few big names that'll be back with the Cougars coming up next year?
Well, Owen Wedge, a left-handed pitcher who started that game 3 against Mary, will be a senior, and he had elbow surgery last year and didn't pitch. And so getting him back to form was big for us, and we're hoping he can take that next step. And he's a kid that actually was in the portal, went to St. Cloud State, was told he wasn't going to pitch much there and to go to a JUCO. And he had a buddy here, and he came here and pitched well for us his first year, and then, like I said, had an injury. But he's a key guy. Brady Schaefer, who was a junior college Dakota County Tech kid that came in and had a good year out of the DH, hitting behind Mitch Iliff and kind of protecting him. And Nolan Drossel, who was our center fielder 2 years ago, moved to second base last year and had a good year kind of hitting our nine hole, kind of our second leadoff. He's going to be a senior as well. And we have a lot of young. I'm mostly excited because of my incoming group. I mean, I like the guys I have coming back, don't get me wrong, but we have the most talented incoming freshman class that I've been able to put together in my 10 years. And a lot of that is just from winning and getting tied for third last year and then continuing that. I'm hoping I can stack some good classes together, because mm-hmm. that's how you get to the next level. I feel like at this level, I don't want to bring in all, you know, transfers. I'm trying to bring in high school kids and build them, but it does hurt when you do that for 3 years and then they leave you, you know, your mm-hmm. fourth year of eligibility and they leave. But, you know, you just got to, it helps them. I mean, I'm talking to kids last night on the phone and they see these kids are leaving. They see that these kids are going to go play D1 and stuff. And so they see that we're developing and helping kids get better. And that's kind of what they want too. And this won't be the last group of guys that we leave. I can see with the kids I'm bringing in, it's going to get tougher to keep kids as you keep getting better.
And certainly well said there. Very exciting things ahead for USF Cougar baseball. Just wrapped up the 2026 season with a mark of 26-26. Coach Grant Heave, our guest. Coach, lastly, my friend, let us behind the curtain a little bit on the offseason agenda for you personally, coaching staff. What boxes need to be checked, and what are some goals this offseason for you guys with USF Cougar baseball?
Just to get out and see as many players as we can. My assistants are happy. I'm finally hung up the cleats. We're playing town ball. And I wasn't really playing a lot. I mean, I mm-hmm. still tried to hit, but I couldn't do anything else. But it was fun just to go and not have to coach and just get to let my boy run around and chase foul balls like I did growing up. But now I'll probably, you know, be at a few more events. And we already feel like we go to as much as we can. We're trying to get eyes on kids, and we have a lot of kids reaching out, and so we got to try to get out and see them. And yeah, I don't know, just to also try to, this used to be kind of our downtime, and now we're in the portal working harder than, you know, ever just the next few weeks. So hopefully we can take a little time off, and I'd like to go out to my family's cabin in the Black Hills. But like I said, I looked at the schedule and I don't have any, I might not get out there till August, but I don't know. I want to win, so priority number one is getting out and recruiting.
Certainly, it's a big offseason for USF Cougar baseball. Big, impressive class coming in. All a big, bright future ahead. USF Cougar baseball. Head coach Grant Heeb on a Monday. Coach, have a great offseason. Hopefully, you get some of that aforementioned R&R time out in the Black Hills. Wish you all the best. We'll talk again real soon.
Thanks, Bert. Have a good one.
We absolutely will. USF Cougar baseball head coach Grant Heeb, the season in which they just wrapped up, 26-26, the record, and an honest conversation there about the transfer portal. You know, I want to win. I want guys coming in. I want people fired up. But the most inspiring part of that conversation to me was the tried and true, the grassroots operation. I want to add via high schoolers that come in, want to be bought in, want to stay with this program, and then maybe add some ancillary pieces in the portal, give you that boost, that experience, the been there, done that, guys that fit the program. Exciting stuff ahead for USF Cougar baseball. They concluded the season with a mark of 26-26. That is all for now in the baseball world. Again, Cougar baseball head coach Grant Heeb just moments ago. Other basketball news before we call it an hour number one. The Pelicans have made their head coach hire. Orlando Magic former head coach Jamal Mosley will head down to the Big Easy, be the franchise's new head coach on a five-year deal. Mosley reached an agreement with the Pels after five seasons in Orlando, where he led the Magic to three consecutive playoff berths despite multiple injury-plagued campaign. Mosley was fired by Orlando back on May the 4th, a day after they lost Game 7 to Detroit after being up 3-1 in the series. Pelicans hiring former Magic head coach Jamal Mosley as of this morning. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander named the NBA MVP for a second consecutive season just yesterday, winning the award in a landslide after another stellar year for the defending champion Oklahoma City Thunder. SGA is only the fifth active player to be named MVP in consecutive years, also the seventh over the past 40 years to win multiple MVPs before turning 28. The others on that list: Jokic, Giannis, Steph Curry, Tim Duncan, MJ, and of course, LeBron James. Every retired player to win consecutive MVPs has been inducted in the Hall of Fame. That list also includes Steve Nash, Tim Duncan, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Moses Malone, Kareem, Wilt Chamberlain, and Bill Russell. SGA speaking about winning back-to-back MVPs. It's special. All those guys have shaped the game of basketball. All those guys have changed the game and how it's played and how it was approached before that. To be in that circle, to be in the conversation, it's something I don't take lightly. I am super grateful for it, and a well-deserved MVP double, back-to-back MVP for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. One key player that is dealing with some injury concern heading into the Eastern Conference Finals is OG Anunoby of the New York Knicks. He said his right hamstring he sustained in the playoffs wasn't as bad as the one he suffered 2 years ago. Anunoby was hurt late in the Knicks' victory over the Sixers in Game 2 back on May the 6th, missed the final two games of the series, returned to practice this week, and has been a full participant over the last 2 days, saying that he feels good. And that is the latest and greatest news from the NBA for now. When we come back, right back into your headlines and highlights, the NFL news you missed over the weekend centered around one Aaron Charles Rodgers getting back into the National Football League, and he re-signs on a new one-year $25 million deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We break that down, whip around the sports world, and say so long in hour number two with the latest and greatest in a big edition of The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. That's coming up next. Hour number two around the corner. Overtime on a Monday continues right after this.